everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial with Dr. Sherry Siegel. I was very touched the other day by reading an article by a man named John Elder Robinson, who talked about how he, as a child, was autistic. And he talked about, you know, he talked about the distinction between people who have neurological impairments of some sort or other, and then people who they call neurotypical people, which are the rest of the folks. Sherry Siegel, since neurology is your world, I wanted to ask you a little about this. I wanted to ask you something about people's manners and people's behaviors, because there's a funny thing about people with, well, let's start with people who have got some kind of dementia. Okay, now can you describe, dementia and Alzheimer's are different things, right?
Actually, Alzheimer's
is a form of dementia.
Exactly, yes. It's a subset. There are many types of dementia. One of them is Alzheimer's.
What kinds of dementia are there?
There's multi-infarct dementia that comes from little strokes in different parts of the brain. That's a type of dementia. There's a dementia that's associated with Parkinson's disease. It's a cousin of it. We call it Lewy body disease. And so sometimes there's dementia with those two disorders.
When you have the dementias of the other kind, symptoms could be somewhat similar to, you know, forgetting, forgetfulness, gaps in memory. What else is there?
That's exactly right, that each of them has something in common, but they have little things that make them different from each other. It basically affects it's where the illness is affecting in the brain. So if the illness is focused on the frontal lobe of the brain, some people can lose their executive functions. And those are the functions that say, this is, you can say anything you want. Rather, when you don't have those functions, you say anything you want anywhere to anyone. And so when your executive functions are affected by the Alzheimer's or by the other types of dementia, you may not be what's considered polite.
Well, very interesting concept. So your inhibitions might get pulled away. There's two parts of us. One part of us tells us you could do anything you want, and another part of us tells us, well, you better not do some of those things because they're going to have consequences. When you have some kind of this function is broken, the executive function is broken, smashed, turned around or something, there's a tendency, you say, to just let it out, let it hang out however it is. When that happens, it would manifest in someone's, what about their eating habits? Might they stop eating with a fork and they start picking up their food with their hands?
Exactly, or they may take their soup bowl and pick it up and slurp it.
Because it seems like the most sensible thing to do.
Right, and it goes back to your discussion about autism. People with autism are very logical, they're fair, and they see things as utilitarian. So if you have a bowl and you want to get what's in it to your mouth and ingest it, why not pick up the bowl and just take it in? But our system of manners and politeness and table manners, for example, doesn't allow that. So sometimes that's difficult to understand for people with autism, or it's a challenge for them.
It is a very difficult thing. You even wonder why they have, you know, pass the food. They talk about pass the food because they used to have people who would be reaching across for the food. But if they had dirty shirts, if they were farmers, there were bugs crawling all over their bodies that could drop right into the food. And it was like the idea of pass the food was to not let it become something that everything could get into. So the manners kind of... Well, manners and politeness are a very funny thing because they change from culture to culture. One of the best descriptions I ever heard of manners, they said manners are like laws. They set a standard for human behavior. There's no formal punishment for violating the manners other than social disapproval. So if a person does something like belches in public, that's considered to be of poor manners. Now, one of the things I also read was it kind of says, and this is your breeding. This is the home you come from. This is the way you are. So it reflects on everybody. So manners are a very funny thing. Manners, what's right, what's not right. I don't want people to be polite if they're constantly abused. I want them to rebel. You know, I want people to stand up for themselves if they have to. But there is something about manners that seems to be changing. And here's a question I have for the audience, and a question we'll take some calls on. Not immediately, but it's a question for you to consider. The question is, if you could enforce one rule of etiquette, what would it be? And how would it improve social interaction? So if there was one rule of etiquette that you could enforce, that you could get people to do, like don't spit in the street, like don't, different things, what would it be? Manners have changed a great deal. There used to be one manner, which was always respect your elders. But as society changes and things change, elders become somebody who are closer to you than they used to be. It used to be your elder was 60 and you were 20. Now 60-year-olds and 20-year-olds work side by side. They're equals. They're not considered, you know, you are an elder anymore. You're just an older person doing my job. So the respect kind of gets a little lost. What is manners? Or what are manners? What are they? What is it? What's it all about? That's what we're going to talk about today, because I think it has a lot to do with, you're going to hear us talk about road, driving, cell phones, all the other things that I think affect people. And maybe our discussion here could make a difference. One thing for sure, manners are usually seen as a sign of intelligence. You know, a person with, and I'm going to use the word good manners, but I don't mean it, the pejorative sense of it, that, you know, there are bad manners. But a person with manners is generally seen as more intelligent. Now, that's one case. In another case, I want to tell a story about a young man I knew. He was 9 years old. He lost his father. He was brought up by his mother to always respect everybody who was a male. Now, he was black by birth. So he was taught to always have manners and always be polite. So much so that he was afraid. He was afraid to ever talk. He was afraid to come out. He practically lived in a closet. Now, I knew this boy a long time, and it took a long time to get him over the danger, the damage that was done by his fear of breaking the rule of manners. What could happen? How it would reflect on his family? How it would reflect on himself?
I know someone like that as well, Armand. Someone that I know had a mother and father who didn't get along, and the person that I'm speaking of defended his mom to the point to protect her and really make sure that the father didn't hurt her in any way. After this blow up and this event, the mom asked him to go to apologize to his father, and I can only imagine the conflict and the confusion that the child had, thinking, I was just doing the right thing, taking care of my mom. I might not have been polite to push my father away, but that it was the right thing to do to defend my mom.
You know, things are enforced for one reason or another. One wonders, you know, when you tell a child, say thank you. You know, I give a gift to a child and the mother says, did you say thank you? I always feel this thing inside. Please don't ask that child to say thank you. Please don't do it. I know you're trying to teach your child something, but I don't want the child to say thank you. I want the child to feel thank you. You know, grandma, you get socks at Christmas from your grandmother. Say thank you to grandmother. What kid could thank his grandmother for a pair of socks?
So let me ask you a question, Armand. Do you think that if we teach kids all these manners and say thank you and all this other stuff, do you think that after a while they take it on, or do you think that it's just a superficial task for them to do?
I think if you want your parents' approval, you take it on. I think if you're rebellious, you reject it. Now, there's something very interesting about people who have manners amongst each other. Teenagers have a very strong code of manners.
Yes, they do. In fact, even though to some of us, we may not see their manners, or we may not even see them sometimes as respectful. Among their peers, there's a very definitive set of manners. And among their peers, they want to make sure they're accepted among their peers. They're the priority for those people who are teenagers or young adults. And so they follow those manners to a T, even though they may not look respectful to us.
If we talk about etiquette and we talk about manners, you know, it always kind of it sounds like we're kind of giving a little too much attention to classy, quote, people who look down on poor people. Because poor people usually don't have manners, and rich people usually do. Therefore, if you don't have manners, you're a poor person from poor breeding. Well, it makes sense.
It reminds me of My Fair Lady when the professor was teaching, I forgot the character's name, but when he was teaching her to be polite and to say to use the right words, to not only pronounce them correctly, but to do all the polite acts and use the polite words.
On one hand, you know, on the other hand, when you're poor and you're trying to do little.
Liza Doolittle. Oh, I'm so glad you remembered.
But when you're doing when you're poor and you're struggling and you're trying to make ends meet, it's very hard to have spare minutes to be polite. So what looks like non-politeness, for example, you're starving and somebody throws some food around that you could grab, and you grab it and you gulp it down while you're at work. And you're working a hard job where every minute every minute you take out, you're not getting paid for. So you golf your food down, or you run it down your belly and you just eat real quick. And people say, oh, he's got poor manners for eating that way. But the truth of it is, I don't have time for manners. Now, time for manners. Those are two words that go together. Time and manners. The difference between the different social and financial structures in the world is that people who have more time. People who have less time. People who have more free time. They have time in between. People who don't have much, they don't have time in between. They're struggling with every moment. So if manners are a matter of time, look at what we choose. What are some of the true signs of manners? Well, one is that you listen attentively. If you want to be somebody who is seen as having good manners, you listen attentively to someone. Listening is good manners. But what that means is you've learned to have the time to listen. Don't jump to the end of a person's sentence. Don't be impatient. But wait, how do you not be impatient if you are? If you're a nervous type, does that mean you can't have manners? Nervous type of people have a great difficulty having manners because they can't sit still long enough. It's hard. It's a very hard part. It's a very hard thing to do when you're so anxious.
And always going on to the next thought and the next step, the next thing to do. Sometimes when people get on an elevator, for example, you'll notice the first thing that they do is take out the BlackBerry or the cell phone, who called me, what's my next thing to do? Because the being still and the listening and the being present is very challenging for people who have anxiety. And I think for many of us these days, we don't have to be diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. Many of us feel that pressure.
There seems to be something that's happening in the chemistry of people and the minds of people where they're just becoming a little more dopaminergic. You know, there's a little more, I got to move fast, I got to move fast, I got to move fast, and a little less serotonergic, a little less, you know, calmer down and take it slower. And that thing is happening. It's happening with men and with women. People are in a hurry to fill every minute, but it's all about time. As we go through this today, you're going to see it keeps getting reduced to time. What is road rage about? Somebody's in a hurry. Somebody has poor driving manners. I have great driving manners. I mean, not good driving manners. I have great driving manners. I believe that whoever is crossing a road, a pedestrian, has a right ahead of me in my automobile, and so does a bicycle. So when I'm driving, I really believe you have the right. You know, I'm lucky to be on this road, but you have the right. You're on foot. So I never want to scare people. I never want to drive up too close to them. I'm always giving them consideration. And I spend some of my time in a part of the country where if a person steps in the street, the traffic stops. Because that's the way they do it, you know? And I like that. I like it a lot. But again, it's time. If I'm in a hurry and someone is walking across the street, what do I feel? If I'm in a hurry and someone's walking across the street on a cell phone, not looking at me or even considerate of me. In fact, the other day, somebody stood in front of my car while they dialed another number. And I said, I'm tempted to blow this horn. But then I looked inside and I said, no, be graceful.
You are a graceful person.
Well, sometimes, and sometimes I'm not. But so again, it was time. So now I'll look at another one, our intolerance of people with cell phones, right? It's all about time. They are coming into our space. They are moving in. They are making sounds. People with iPods. What is iPod now that people are listening to music all the time, everywhere you go and wherever you go, there will be people who have a headset on and the headset could be blaring. And now your private space is invaded by people all around you.
And that's a lot of what matters go back to, the ability to live with other people and the consideration for their space and their time and my space and my time, and how does that negotiate? So manners seem to be a negotiation between those two things.
How do you feel about your own manners, my friends? How do you feel about your own ability to listen to people as they speak, to not necessarily interrupt? You know, how do you feel about your consideration of other folks when you're on a cell phone, when you're talking on your cell phone, when it rings? It's easy to judge it. It's easy to say, hey, you know, you shouldn't do this, and it's a really bad thing to do. But I'd be curious about what you felt about it. I'd be curious as to what you, the audience, feels about this. This is Armand DeMille with Sherry Siegel. We're looking at the two things, manners, etiquette. It's kind of a funny word, etiquette. What do you think it means, Sherry?
I think it's similar to manners, that someone, that there's a certain way of acting, a standard of acting in a society. And I suspect that that might be one of the definitions of etiquette.
So among manners we know, don't talk too loud, right? What else?
Don't cut in line.
Don't cut in line. Why not?
If five people are waiting in line, mm-hmm, and someone kind of scooches in front, why should they get to the goal before the other five people?
Good. Okay. So now here is this thing. This is the thing that we always run into, all of us. We decide to play by the rules. There was a time in my life when I played by no rules. I violated every rule. There was no boundary that I wouldn't go through, you know? Now I look at it and I say, wait a minute. I have more time. I'm calmer inside. I could play by the rules. I could do this. If I'm in a hove lane driving a car, for people who know what that is, I don't have to jump out of it. I don't have to leave it. It's nice. It's peaceful. It's paced. I don't care if the person in front of me is going slowly. That's fine. That's the way this works. That's the deal here. See, now, when somebody else breaks the rules, just as I might have broken them when I was younger, I now look at them and say, person's anxious. I think of it as anxiety. I think of it as a nervous person. I think of it as a person who is inconsiderate of other people because they don't have the time or the wherewithal to consider anybody else because they are so wrapped up in their own world and consideration of themselves. Is that a judgment? No, you poor guy. Whoever you are who is so wrapped up that you can't see the people around you, I feel sorry for you. I really feel sorry for you. Rarely will it touch me. So if someone cuts in line and there's only 5 balls left and I want to buy a ball and there's only 5 of them left and I'm 5th in line and somebody steps in and gets one of them, I might get upset about that. But other than that, I look and I wonder. I do, however, I do have limits. When I see somebody throw trash on the floor, I pick it up and give it to them. I say, you drop this. I do that. I just want to make my contribution.
But that's such a well-mannered way to say it.
Yeah. Yeah, you dropped it. Some people get real angry, but, you know, I get away with it. But there are places where I have judgment. I'd love to hear what the people have to say about it. We're going to take their calls. But what were you going to say just now?
I'd love to hear what the callers have to say about this and what they've experienced, whether they see a change in manners these days than, say, when they were growing up, or that question you asked earlier, if they could enforce one rule of etiquette, which would it be? And how would it change things?
One rule, yeah. The other thing about, you know, there was a thing about you should always look at somebody when you talk to them. Some people don't like being looked at. So I'm not sure that's right, but you should regard somebody as a different story. When you listen to someone speak, if you give them regard, saying, I see you, I understand you, I am hearing you, that's a different thing. That feels different. On the other hand, not looking at someone ever, that's what they call impolite, you see? When you don't look at them at all, when you don't regard them at all, interrupting people while they speak, it's another thing. Letting people talk themselves out, but then there are those people who never stop talking. What do you do? What do you do, Sherry? What do you do?
It's a really challenging problem. Sometimes a conversation, as I understand it, is a back and forth discourse. When it's one person speaking and the other person listening, there's an active and a passive person. Sometimes sharing that activity is nicer. It's a challenge. But I think sometimes learning a good way to interrupt a polite way to interrupt is helpful.
Like what?
Could you wait for a moment, Armand, and let me step in here? I have some ideas about what you've said.
Yeah.
That might be one way to do it, but it always seems awkward.
You know what I notice about people who talk endlessly? Usually it's a mind, it's called the abstract sequential mind. It's a mind that is filled with so much information that the mind cannot let go of any particular thing. So you start to talk, and then the mind sees association upon association upon association, and it keeps putting it out there. Now the trouble is, the difference between people who are talking just to talk and people who are talking to you is, do they look at you when they speak? I know people who could talk for a long time, but they never look at you. They're looking away as if they're thinking out loud. It's in those cases that I interrupt people. When I feel that a person is just talking but not talking to me, I'll interrupt them. I'll say, excuse me, Sherry, you know, excuse me. I know you're talking about this and you keep talking about it, but I don't even know if you know I'm here.
Right, because a conversation is about connecting and about sharing information and sharing feelings. So if there is no connection being made by eye contact and by taking turns, then it's not really a conversation. It's not really a connection.
Sometimes you have to, what do they call the polite?
Polite lie?
Yeah, what is a polite lie?
A polite lie is where both parties involved seem to know that the lie exists, But because it's not acceptable, in some societies, for example, it's not acceptable to say no. Apparently in Japanese society, it's not acceptable to say no. So the response is yes, even though an action might not be taken on that. Or
so you might say hi, which is what I've seen them do when you bow, and it just means more, I acknowledge what you're saying, but I'm not saying no.
Mm-hmm.
And I may not take an action that follows this through.
Right, and there's always that awkward situation, even in our own society. Do I look fat? A person who knows that they may have gained 10, 20, 30 pounds, and asks someone, do I look like I've gained weight? And it kind of puts the other person in an awkward situation.
Well, you see, now, in the world of etiquette, you would never put somebody in that situation. You see, you wouldn't put somebody in a situation where you would embarrass them. You would never ask somebody to gossip. In politeness, there is no gossip. In real etiquette, you talk well about people or you don't talk at all. You know, it's the way you do it. Now, of course, if you're going to talk about somebody to give them information about a doctor, for example, that you might have seen, or a lawyer or somebody who you think is really harmful, potentially harmful to them, that's one thing. But generally, you try never speak badly about anybody.
It reminds me of the Golden Rule. I mean, really, that's what the Golden Rule is about. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And so if I want people to respect me and feel respected, I would want to treat people with respect and respect them as well. If someone gives me something, I feel gratitude. And sometimes showing the gratitude by saying thank you is it's polite, but it's also heartfelt. It's really going back to what you were saying about the person as well who wants to jump ahead in line. You feel compassion toward that person, toward their anxiety possibly, or their own difficult circumstances. It's great to have that kind of compassion. And I suppose if we all had such compassion, it would be a different place to live. And we would feel polite and a lot of gratitude. And it would be a nice world.
Well, that's the other thing I notice about people call impolite. I often wonder that they have a reason to be that way. When children are not polite, I usually say to myself, oh, the kind of pressures at home, whatever they are, is having this child bust out in this kind of way. So I look at it, and I always look at it, and I say, we're giving them a reason. You know, when people rebel, when people rebel in the streets or when there's a riot, there's a reason for this riot. It's not these are bad, impolite people. We've created this in some way, and we're all a part of it. This is Armand DeMille with Sherry Siegel with you. We're taking your telephone calls at 212-209-2900. We're going to take your calls today. We want to hear from you about this. And I want you to talk about yourself a great deal, friend. And also, keep in mind, tomorrow we have some bargain basement sales going on here, end-of-year sales. Be sure to tune in. You're going to have an opportunity to get some special things, CDs, consultations at prices never before heard. It's our end-of-year cleanup, what we got in the back for WBAI. Get a few bucks around here, and if you want to volunteer your time to answer the phones during our time or any other time, call the station. So we'll be taking your calls in a little bit. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back shortly. And that's Jimmy Noone, or is it No One? N-O-O-N-E, from Bump It, B-U-M-P. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Pod of the Mind. We're talking about manners in conversation. It's just, we did a little research on this, and we came up with cell phone manners. Just to, they're kind of obvious. Number one, when a private conversation isn't possible, and that means public restrooms, waiting rooms, hallways, buses, subways, or where a private conversation is not possible, it is a bad place, they call it, to have a cell phone conversation. What's it saying? When you say you're having a conversation in front of, it means none of you count. You people don't exist. Only I exist on my phone call with the person I'm talking to. It is impolite to talk in public on a cell phone for more than a few seconds.
Another rule is when lights go out, phones go off. So when you go to a movie theater or a playhouse, it creates an atmosphere that the audience is paying for. They want to be present in the moment. So when the ringer goes off in the middle of performance, it breaks the illusion. It breaks the concentration and the focus of people. So turn off the phone in the movies.
You know what I came to yesterday, Sherry? I was thinking about phones. I was talking to a friend of mine on a regular phone, and I miss the sound of a phone. I miss the sound of a telephone against my ear talking into a telephone against somebody's ear, two landlines talking, you know what I mean? Real deep conversation. Instead, what we get is this kind of thing where you talk past a little hole in a phone and your voice gets picked up. You have to modulate your voice, too. A lot of people think they have to shout. You know, I've noticed a lot of people shouting into phones as if they think they have to overcome the sound around them. There's a 10-foot rule. It basically says if you're within 10 feet of people, try not to speak on a phone.
And if you do get a call, keep it as short as possible. Or if you have to take a call or make a call, it should be brief when you're with other people.
And most of all, the one is love the one you're with. It is absolutely rude to take a phone call on a date or a social engagement. It's just cheap. Love the one you're with. You know what I mean? I mean, what did you do before cell phones? What did you do? Right? You actually went out with somebody and had dinner.
You're present in the moment.
And of course, the obvious one about driving. It's common sense now. Never talk on a cell phone when you're driving. Because it's just really endangering everybody. This is 212-209-2900. We're going to take some calls. I want to hear from you. I want to hear what you have to say about this. The real question we have, if there was one rule of etiquette that you could see, like the word please, what happened to the word please? Excuse me, would you please? Could you kindly please? Those kind of words. Remember those nice words? What happened to those? Could we bring them back? Let's take one of your calls. Armand DeMille, 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Armand.
Hello there.
Nice to you and your guest. I listen to you and I sometimes agree with you, sometimes I don't. But I had to weigh in today because I absolutely disagree with the statement you made earlier.
Which one?
That poor people don't have manners.
No, I didn't say poor people don't have manners. Oh, no.
Yes, if you reviewed the tape, it came out that way.
Sure. Oh, well, I'm sorry. And thank you so much. Thank you. Wait, stop for a moment. Let me clarify that, okay? Mm-hmm. What I am saying is that one of the things that the society has held against poor people is that they say poor people don't have manners because poor people don't have the time very often to exhibit the same kind of manners. I think it's a way of putting down poor people,
well,
and I object to it.
I agree with you on what you just said. The fact that the poor people don't have the time, I think basically there's a difference between manners and what people might call the social graces or etiquette. And the difference being that we all have manners, or we're all raised to have manners, poor or wealthy, but then you learn also how to navigate using etiquette, using manners at a level that is higher, how to really navigate the social echelon.
Well, how did you learn that? I mean, where did you get the instruction from that? Did you have a family who helped you learn that?
Well, manners, basically, I learned at home. I learned at school. I learned around, you know, my environment.
Okay, now when you were a child, though, were there children around you who didn't have good manners?
Yes, not because they didn't learn it, but because maybe sometimes they refused to to participate or to do as their parents, bid them.
So you would say that manners, from what you're teaching us, manners are a sign of feeling connected to your family. That if your family teaches you something and you want to respect it, and you think that they may be teaching you something that's good, you might do something and follow along with what they say. But there are some children who just disagree with their parents' teachings and are angry with their teachers, and that comes out very often in what looks like.
Adults as well as children. However, mm-hmm. there are times when you're forced to say certain things, and your parents may teach you this is a polite thing to say. You say it nonetheless, even though you may not agree with it. It's the same way that my father encouraged me to have to dissent. However, there was a certain point, even in our discussions, that he said if it had to be done, I had to respect authority and do it. Mm. Now, there is a different stage. I went to school, for example, with somebody whose parents sent her to finishing school in Europe, and she had this social etiquette, and she knew how to really, do certain things a certain way. But that is not... She had manners just like everybody else, but she went beyond that in knowing how to use it as a tool to kind of get her way or to navigate the system at a certain level that maybe we were not exposed to. That's different from just having manners, saying thank you, please, excuse me, etc. So we have to make a qualitative difference there, I think.
Thank you very much.
I disagree with you also on the point of not telling, the child, of disagreeing with the child, the parent saying thank you. How do you also teach children, even from a selfish way, to get something done? If they don't say thank you in the first place, then that favor may not be extended again. Not that that's the only reason you're teaching the child, but that goes across the board in terms of if you don't tell me thank you, do I feel in any way connected to do the favor for you again or to repeat the process?
I think. What if the gift is not a gift?
You still thank the person for considering you, even though you may not use it. You may give it along to somebody
else. I've known of schools where people discipline children by whipping them, and they force the children to thank them for the whipping.
No, well, that is abuse. I was whipped, but I never had to force anybody, and whether I disagreed with it or not. I was not forced to.
Sure, I know that. So I say there's a question about when that thank you is due and when it's not, because if you force something on a child and a child doesn't want it, I don't think the child has to show gratitude.
Well, that is not manners. That is just common sense. If you beat me, I'm not going to thank you. You could kill me. So
I understand. Well, thank you very much for your contribution.
You're welcome. Right. Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Actually, the call before covered some of the stuff I wanted to cover, and I sort of agree with most of the points she was making, she already made.
Uh-huh.
Anyhow, the only thing I wanted to add was the concept of respecting old people.
Yeah, what about it?
I think everyone has to earn respect, except maybe if you're a child, you are new in the world, and you have to learn certain things as you go. Just because someone's old, I don't think they should get respect, because old people are still people. They still have negative traits. They still do things that are disagreeable to others. So just because you're old, I don't think you need to get respect just because you're old.
Well, that's kind of
I don't believe
thing.
That.
Good, good, good. And let me ask you something else. If there were one rule of etiquette or manners that you would like people to practice more, which one would it be? What would you like people to do more?
The only thing I would like people to do more, there's one thing I can think I'd like people to do less, which is the social habit of, hey, how are you doing, when that doesn't really mean anything. You don't really,
mm-hmm.
there's no true feeling behind how you're doing. It's just to get to the other level of, well, I'm doing this, or I can't think of the word now. But yeah, that's something I would like you to stop doing unless you mean it.
You would like people to not say, how are you, unless they really care.
Yeah. I mean, what's the point of saying, how are you?
Well, the point of saying, how are you, is...
Just say good morning. Just say good morning.
It's what's called a common courtesy. But what you would prefer is good morning.
Yes, good morning, good afternoon. That's much better.
Thanks for calling in. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. 212-209-2900. Hello.
Hi, Dr. DeMille. I'm calling in response to your question about what you would like to see continued or done more of, and I'm relating it to what the world was like when I was growing up. And it seems to me that, or more like, I wouldn't say it was perfect at all, but it seems to me that what we have lost is a quality of reverence, and that is a thing that I would love to see returned. And, you know, just as the, I guess the last caller, I'm not sure, talked about how, you know, he doesn't want to be asked, I guess this is what he said, how are you? Because it's just a way to get to talking about yourself as opposed to a genuine inquiry. And it seems to me that that really kind of covers it. You know, we live in a time when there's sort of a pretense towards that, but it's really all about us. It's really not about you and that or the other person. And that quality of reverence for the other person seemed to me more present when I was growing up. Again, I didn't grow up in a perfect time, but at least that seemed to be more intact. And now
it seems from what you're saying that it's like it's again time. It's time to regard you.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I don't have the time to regard you. I've just got to, you know, tell you about myself or something.
Exactly. And the, you know, of course, the trick there or the lie there is that, you know, that whole quality of reverence isn't reflected back to you. I think if we were, well, I mean, this is impossible to do, but if we tested it, let's say, and we got 1,000 people to try behaving in a more reverent way toward their fellow man, animals, whatever, I think that has a calming effect, and it also has a feedback loop, which is you receive more of that genuine attention as you give it out. And so,
well, let me ask you a question. If you were walking down the street in New York, mm-hmm. and everyone you saw nodded and smiled,
yep.
would you feel funny?
No, actually, I have to say that I have gone to cities in the Midwest where that's pretty much
that's right.
the habit or the practice, and it's actually quite nice. You
Isn't
know,
it
because
beautiful?
One,
I had that in Minneapolis. I'll never forget. Everybody. Yeah. Was just nodding and smiling. Hello, hello, regard you, I regard you, I regard you.
Exactly, and it's, you know, it's like the namaste, you know, the mm-hmm. God within me greets the God within you. I find that quite, I mean, there are people who might find it disingenuous or annoying or have more of a need for, you know, more of a need for their own solitude, but I find that connection kind of reassuring and helpful. I mean, I think that lifts your spirits. But,
and it's what you actively do?
You know, I do. I mean, I don't make a habit of it. I don't consciously do it, but I have sort of a, because of how I was raised and the time I was raised in, I really like to look in the eye of the person checking out the groceries and say, how are you doing? You know, gee, it's busy today, or, you know, that whole, and that's exactly what I'm saying. I think I grew up in a time or in an environment where that was more cultivated, it was more expected, and so it became a part of my own, you know, way of being. And it's really very nice. I mean, I'm not saying it's the solution to world peace, but, you know, life is stressful enough. And I think those little moments, because we all actually are here to connect, or, you know, ultimately we don't want to be here, that is a, you know, it's an added experience.
When you say to someone, how are you? Mm-hmm. There's two ways to say it. When I go on a checkout counter, I always wind out with somebody telling me their life story. I don't know how it happens, but I say to a person, the way I say, how are you? I really mean it.
Right.
Not like our previous caller who mm-hmm. said, you know, when people say, how are you? You know, and they really
right.
don't care.
Right.
And when people respond, I listen, and it's an interesting thing to put that down. To say it to someone, you know, how is your day today? What's this like for you today? And they tell you the truth. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing to have that passed on to you. And, you know, it's one of the things about checkout counters that I've noticed. People are dead on checkout counters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They died. It's like, I wonder where their soul went.
Exactly.
You know, where'd your spirit go? Huh? You know?
And well, my other favorite place to do this is when you're paying the toll on the toll road,
uh-huh.
how about the people in the toll booths? I mean, imagine that experience of rushing people rushing by you. You have a single job, which is to just hand out a piece of paper or make change. And there's no quality of environment and there's no quality of connection. And I'm always amazed at how, you know, even the frostiest of those people, you can, you know, get a response from them, which, I mean, it's just my observation and it could be totally false, but there's a little uplift in there. You know,
you sound like a very gentle person, and you seem to give a lot in the world. I like that.
Well, thank you, and thanks for talking with me.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. You know, there was a question about how to behave around people who you don't like. There was a question. You know, here's one of the instructions. If you don't like somebody and you want to know how you're supposed to behave around them, how do you be polite with people you don't like? Well, here's some instructions that might be helpful. Number one, try to understand what you don't like about yourself. Look at yourself and say, what don't I like about yourself? A lot of things that we don't like in other people are actually things that we don't like about ourselves. So if you see somebody that you don't like, look at them and say, where is this person a part of me? For example, if you see somebody who's selfish and you say, I resent their selfishness, you're probably resenting your own being manifested in somebody else or your own need to be that way. The second thing is you make a resolve to yourself. The resolve is, why not be respectful, courteous, and kind to everybody, whether or not you like them? Why not? Why can't we be, whether I like you or not? Why can't I be kind to you? Well, when I'm in a hurry, I forget that. It's all about being in a hurry, my friends. Number three is excuse yourself from the room or situation if you're feeling angry, and take time to compose yourself. Try to deal with your feelings rather than insulting or being passively aggressive towards those people you don't like. Keep in mind that you can only control yourself and how you view and deal with the situation. So each time you view and deal with a situation differently, you become a bigger person. And finally, if you are with people you don't like and you have to be with them and you're trying to find a place of politeness, focus on the positive aspects of the people you don't like. Force yourself to find good things about them. Mention the things about them that you like and tell them that you appreciate it. A lot of people just need encouragement to keep going and making improvements. And any acknowledgement of any kind always kind of makes a difference for people. 212-209-2900. We have time for another call. Hi there, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Okay, hi. I met you actually once, and I don't even know where to begin now. I agree with like the woman before me like 100 million zillion percent, and you know, I'm very good at talking to people that I don't know, and eye contact, and I believe, you know, in my heart, you know, loving everybody. And I don't know what to do, though, when people, tend to be, with my own friends, a compulsive talker when I talk, and when I'm not a compulsive talker, I mean, I can't get out of bed for days, and I love my own solitude, and yet I don't know how to communicate or share love against people that are sharing hatred and prejudices. And then I realized that, like, I'm myself kind of closed-minded when I'm, you know, I don't know how to communicate love in the face of, like, recently when Rosh Hashanah, when I went to dinner, and these all my women friends who I thought were so open and smart, and, you know, we're all saying, like, when I said my own cousins won't buy things made in Germany, and they said, well, neither would we. And I was so flabbergasted, but still apologetic and nice to them. And then the next day, I got so angry. I didn't know what to do with it.
So let me ask you something. You said the following. You said, you vacillate between sometimes being very talkative, where you don't stop because you could feel yourself just talking and talking and talking.
Right.
And at other times being so depressed you can't get out of bed.
Not depressed, whereas my sister thinks I'm so depressed, she's a therapist, because of my staying in bed. When I'm in bed, it's like I can listen to WBAI and just cannot believe the amount of information and knowledge. And
So one of the things, pardon me for interrupting you.
It's fine.
One of the things you're saying is sometimes you just become almost mechanical in the way you absorb information and give out information, and it just kind of runs past you. So it's a matter of timing. There's an impatience that you have.
That's another thing I wanted to ask you about. It's not timing. You have said in the past about people that are compulsively, people that are late and that they're... what's that word?
Passive-aggressive.
Exactly. And I really don't feel that I'm passive-aggressive because I do it to myself. I now try not to make any appointments. Like, I have Coracet.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. And I know this is just what everybody does with you, but we've come to the end of our program.
Yes.
But send me an email, would you?
I'll try.
Nice to talk to you, and thanks for calling in.
Okay, Dr. Armand DeMille.
Okay. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Be sure to tune in tomorrow. We've got some bargains for you, my friends. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Sherry Siegel, thank you so much for your help.
Thanks for having me.
Harry James.